Would you turn, please, to the book of Hebrews, chapter 11. Hebrews, chapter 11. And verse 24. Hebrews 11 and verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. And notice some of the verbs here used about Moses: choosing, esteeming, forsaking. He chose suffering instead of sin. He esteemed reproach more important than riches. And he forsook Egypt with an eye to eternity. I knew that in this session there would be the absence of the teenagers, who would be, of course, listening to Brother Ramsey. So I thought that it would give me an opportunity to speak about something that was on my heart for this conference this year. I want to notice with you leadership principles in the life of Moses. Leadership principles in the life of Moses. Now, there may be some here who would feel that this word will not be for you. If you could just tolerate me for a few minutes, Brother Peterson will be up. But I want to speak to those who are leaders among us, those who will soon be leaders among us, and those whom God is raising up to be leaders. And that, of course, is not confined only to the men among us. Moses is one of the most monumental figures on the pages of Scripture. His life is a testimony to what the grace of God can do with someone who is yielded to God. At one time, he was an insecure man, obviously uncomfortable with the limelight and unable to speak fluently, but he became in God's hand the premier prophet of the Old Testament. That, of course, is according to Deuteronomy 34. What he learned in the school of God and what he displayed in the service of God is what is on my mind for just a few minutes this afternoon. But just consider, first of all, the importance of leaders among us. I come from a country where people imagine we're in a democracy. They forget that we are in a republic down south from you, but they think it's a democracy and everybody's equal. It is not a democracy in the assembly of God. There are men who are over me, who are over us. They are leaders among us. They have a tremendous responsibility. This God-given responsibility is, while some may think an exalted position, it is fraught with huge demands, painful sacrifices, and constant self-denial. They're called shepherds in Psalm 23. Shepherds. And when you read that very well-known psalm, you notice at least these three things about leaders, about shepherds: that they guide the flock, that they guard the flock, and that they go after the flock. They guide the flock. The psalmist speaks about the Lord leading him, bringing him to where the water was to be found and the pasture was to be found. So shepherds must guide. They must be sensitive to how what the needs are among the flock and lead them, guide them, see to it that they are cared for and brought to peaceful areas where they can be fed. But they guard the flock, vigilantly watching to ensure the health and the protection of the sheep. The psalmist said, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. My shepherd is with me. Thou art with me." And he even speaks about the provision of God in the presence of my enemies. And they go after the flock. "He restoreth my soul," seeking the stray in order to bring it back to a place of safety. Dear believer, never give up on anyone who has gone astray. You have a girl, you have a boy that looks to you as if he or she has permanently left. Never give up. God does restore. And shepherds, part of their responsibility is to guide and to guard and to go after. Now think about Moses. And I'm going to throw alliteration out the window and just want to express these things in the plainest, most pointed way that I can. Five things that are absolutely essential for a leader. First of all, a leader must know God. A leader must know God. Mental acuity and alacrity, education, an analytical mind, a critical thinker, intelligence, they're all very valuable, but absolutely indispensable is this. If a person is going to lead me, he must be somebody who knows God. Now you will notice how God expresses that about Moses. Jeremiah 15, God said, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, my mind could not be toward this people. Now that is a remarkable statement. That in all of history that had gone before, with the Abrahams and the Isaacs and the Jacobs and the Enochs, with all of those worthies, God should say, not David, not Abraham, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, they could not turn my mind back to this people. You'll remember that it is said about Moses that there was no prophet in Israel like him who knew God face to face. And when Moses was being criticized, God moves in and says, my servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all my house. With him I will speak mouth to mouth, and the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Why were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? Do you remember in Numbers chapter 9? The journeying of the children of Israel? How do they know when to stop and camp? How do they know when to decamp? How do they know when to pitch the tabernacle? You're not going to pitch a tabernacle overnight and then in the next morning find it's time to pack it all up and move again. So how would they know whether they were staying for a day, one night, a week, a month? They journeyed at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Moses was the conduit. Moses was the vessel. Moses was the channel by which God communicated his mind to the people because Moses knew God. A leader must know God. Of all the other things that he knows, he must know God. Now Moses made three requests that he felt were indispensable things, and they are his prayers, and when you notice God's answer, you watch this man being drawn deeper and deeper into his knowledge of God. They all occur in one passage. His prayers, of course, are a marvelous study, but just Exodus 33, there are three requests that Moses makes of God. He says, show me thy way. He requests thy presence. And then he longs to see thy glory. Thy way, thy presence, thy glory. So here is his statement. Now therefore, his request. Now therefore, I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way, that I may know thee. The answer to that is given to us in Psalm 103. He made known his ways unto Moses, his acts unto the children of Israel. God revealed himself, his ways, fulfilling the request of prayer of Moses. When Moses thought about God's presence, if thy presence go not with us, carry us not up hence. God revealed his presence and promised, I will do this thing that you ask. And so the prayers of that man brought God back into the camp. If I understand the passages correctly there, after the golden calf, God had withdrawn from his people. Said that he would allow an angel to lead them. But Moses understands we need God. And so he goes up to pray, and in the presence of God he says, if thy presence go not with us, carry us not up hence. That he understood we will not take another step. We need the presence of God. It's the heart of a leader who understands that if he is to lead, he needs God by his side. He needs God to lead him. And so he longed for God's presence. And then God's glory. I beseech thee, he said, show me thy glory. And you remember that remarkable Old Testament passage where God says, there's no one that can see me and live, but there is a place by me, and I will hide you in a cleft in the rock, and I will cover you with my hand, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord, and I will be gracious and show mercy on whom I will. We should always value critical thinking and well-honed minds. The Puritans started Harvard University in Massachusetts in the 1600s because they said we want an educated ministry. We don't want to, this is their quote, we don't want to listen to dumb dogs. Well, that's pretty good advice. We should always value men who have, and women who have given their minds to learning and to grasping the things of God. That's knowledge. Now, don't laugh at me. But if you think this over, you will realize how apt a definition this is. The distinction between knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Knowledge. Wisdom is not putting tomatoes in a fruit salad. That's the difference. Knowledge, you accumulate facts. So I know a tomato is not a vegetable, it's a fruit. Wisdom is how I use that knowledge. Wisdom is how I understand what that means. Wisdom is how I understand how that applies. And so knowledge, I may know verses in the Bible. I may be able to spew those verses to you and actually give you the reference for them and be crystal clear in every quote that I give you. But do I know God? Because a leader must know God. Now think of the lessons that helped make him the leader that he became. There was the burning bush. In that he learned how holy God was. There was that leprous hand. Remember when he put it in and brought it out and it was leprous and he put it back in and it came out and God had healed him? He learned how insufficient he was. There was the serpent rod when he threw his rod down and it became a serpent. And then God tells him, take it by the tail. And he takes it by the tail and it is turned back into a rod. And he learned how all-sufficient God was. And of course, that near-fatal illness, some caravan site on the way to Egypt when Moses is lying on his back dying, blinking up at a tent roof and realizing that the God that had called him was allowing him to die because he was failing to obey that God. He learned how all important obedience was to God. Now just watch in his writings and in his life. Is there another man in our Bible who so often displayed in the Old Testament and spoke of holiness and dependence, and the all-sufficiency of God, and obedience to that God? How many times, for instance, obedience did he tell the Israelites in the book of Deuteronomy? Just fear not, only obey the word of the Lord. Obey the law of God. He will make you to prosper. His all-sufficiency. How many times did he remind them? God will not fail you. I will die. Joshua will lead you, but God will not fail you. How they trusted him for the manna, for the water, for protection from their enemies. And who in our Bible wrote more about holy things than did Moses? Lessons that he learned that fitted him for leadership were to be seen later in his life. A leader must know God. But a leader must know God's sheep. He must know the flock. He must be aware of what the saints are suffering. A leader cannot separate himself from the problems and trials of the flock. Notice that Moses could not lead them from a palace. God had to take him out of there. He cannot luxuriate in a palace while his people labor under the taskmaster's whip. He cannot bask in luxury while they die in agony. God takes him out of the palace, immerses him in the backside of the desert, learning to care for sheep, and then calls him to lead his people. He could not lead them from a palace. I read about a woman manager who was retiring. She said that the highest compliment that was paid to her by one of the members of her staff. He said, technically, I know that I always worked for you, but you always made me feel that I worked with you. With you. That's what a leader does. He leads, but you never really think so much about his leading because you're just following. You understand that there's the Christ is being displayed here and that you can follow this man. And so Moses was taken out of the palace. He couldn't be up here and then calling orders down to them from a palace porch while they suffered. But please notice, he could not lead them from afar. He had to go back. He had to join them. He had to become one of them. Isaiah will say this about God. In all of their affliction, Israel's affliction, God said that he was afflicted, that God was afflicted, that he felt what his people were going through. Now Moses had to do the same. There's no such thing as remote control shepherd work. You cannot be a shepherd from a distance. You cannot guard, you cannot guide, you cannot go after the flock if you are removed from the flock. We must feel. We must live where they live and endure what they are enduring. So, dear brother, Ontario is a wonderful province, beautiful province. You just have that one little problem that you didn't have this year of your weather. And Florida looks incredibly attractive just about January 3rd or 4th. And maybe up here, maybe about November 3rd or 4th, right? Vacations are great. Your Toronto preacher here, Mr. Piercy, used to talk about how necessary it was to unstring the bow sometimes. Vacations are great. But please remember, God's flock need you. You cannot shepherd them from 1,000 miles away. Go on vacation. Go on vacation. You need that. But remember, you're one with them. David Packard, of Hewlett Packard fame, died in 1996. Many believe that his chief legacy was his management style. The employees awarded him what they called an MBWA degree. MBWA. Master by walking around. He was there. He was by their desks, in the office. He wasn't up in the ivory palace. He wasn't behind closed doors in a luxurious office. He was down where they were working, watching them, listening to them, hearing their complaints, helping with the work. Master by walking around. A leader must know God. A leader must know God's people. Now, there are two things that flow obviously from that. A leader must care more for God's people than himself. Psalm 106 tells us that God said he would destroy his people. And you remember that he offered to make Moses the founder of a new nation. But the psalmist goes on to say, had not Moses, his chosen, stood before him in the breach to turn away his wrath, lest he should destroy them. A leader must care more for God's people than himself. You say, well, that's a pretty high standard. Well, that's why we should be very careful before we set our sights on thinking we want to be a leader amongst God's people, because it is a high standard. I am not a leader among God's people. I will never be an overseer. I will never be a shepherd. I will never be an elder. I have stayed in homes where there are elders. I know the kind of hours they have to put in. I know the phone calls they get late at night while I'm just lying in bed comfortably heading off towards sleep. It is a demanding line of service to God. And it will be highly honored at the judgment seat of Christ. But a leader must care more for God's people than himself. Notice that in the case of Moses, their preservation was more important than his perpetuation. Remember in chapter 32, when they had sinned, they made the golden calf. He has come down. He has ground it to powder. He has made the people drink. He has issued that challenge. Who was on the Lord's side? You would have thought, looking just at Moses acting here, that he was a very harsh, hard, intractable man. You'd have had to follow him up the mountain. You would have had to listen to him when he was alone with God. You would have had to hear him say, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book. Now that brings us to an English word that you will never have to use at any other time in your life except when you're reading Genesis 3 and Exodus chapter 32. They are aposiopetic passages, for all the value that word is. Aposiopesis is when a sentence is not finished. It's cut off. It's cut off because of some surge of emotion, or something has interrupted the flow because of something else that has come in. So in Genesis 3, lest they should take and eat and live forever, and the sentences never stop, never ended. It's cut off by the horror of what might happen as God moves to banish Adam and Eve from the garden. Exodus 32, Moses is overwhelmed to think of what it would mean if God would just come back with his people. If thou wilt forgive their sin. And if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. Now please, he's not asking to go to hell when he dies. He's not asking to be damned eternally. He is considering everybody alive as being in God's book. See, the book of those who are alive. If somebody has to die here, he's saying to God, let me die for these people. They say that Caesar, when he would take his troops into battle, would put a bright red cape on to give the enemy a target. You want to hit somebody, you hit me. The red cape. Patton, who loved Caesar and read Caesar's writings, he painted his tank red as if to say to the Nazis, you want to aim at a tank here? I'm Patton. Aim here. It's the leader going out ahead of his people, caring more for their well-being than for his safety. Their prophet was more important than his preeminence. Do you remember in Numbers 11, a young man comes running and says, Moses, there's people in the camp, two of them. What names were these? Eldad and Medad. And they're prophesying. And Joshua speaks up and says, my Lord Moses, forbid them. Moses says, do you envy for my sake? Look at all the Lord's people were prophets. He's not interested in preeminence among them. Place, position. This is not an ego trip for him, is it? That's not what a leader is. He's more concerned about their prophet than that he has a distinct place as the prophet and the leader among them, because a true leader cares more for their welfare than his own reputation. And notice, their progress was more important than his predilection. Notice that when he is so concerned to go into the land, that God says to him at the end of chapter 32 of the book of Deuteronomy, you'll see the land, but you will not go. What's the very next verse say? This is the blessing wherewith Moses blessed the children of Israel. Now, I don't know whether you think with me that that is such a remarkable reaction. He cannot go into the land. This is what he has longed for and dreamed of for 40 years. Can't do it, Moses. Moses turns around and his reaction is that I'm going to bless the people who can go into the land, because a leader must know God. A leader must know God's sheep, God's people. A leader must care more for God's people than himself. And number four, a leader must care more for God's honor than his own. Numbers 14. When God, as a result of the people's turning back, their rebellion at Kadesh Barnea, when God said, I will destroy them and I will make of thee a nation greater and mightier than they. What does Moses say? Lord, the Egyptians will hear it. And the Egyptians will say that you did that because you couldn't take them into the land. You couldn't keep your promise. It will bring dishonor to thee, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware them. Therefore, he's done this. What's Moses thinking about? I could be the father of a nation. I could be the father of a nation more numerous than these people stretched out in these tents here, but no, he's not thinking of that. If this happens, it will lessen God's honor. Because a leader must care more for God's honor than his own. Time magazine, back in 1998, used over 30 pages to explore the subject of leadership. Renowned leaders and managers attempted to define the essence of leadership. Not one brought up the truth of the biblical definition of leadership, which is humble service to God and to others. At the close, a leader must know God. A leader must know God's people. A leader must care more for God's people than himself. A leader must care more for God's honor than his own. And just one more. And I would suggest to you that at this stage of assembly testimony, this might well be one of the most important principles of all. A leader must think of the future. He must think of the future. Now hear me out, please. Continuing to serve sometimes involves not continuing to serve. Continuing to serve sometimes involves not continuing to serve in the same way. Letting others do it. Training others to carry on. I think you would have to look no further than just behind me to see an example of that. I'm not an old man, but I remember when the gracious Mr. Albert Joyce used to make the announcements at the Toronto Conference. Then he found the eminently efficient Mr. Norman Lorimer, and he turned the job over to Mr. Lorimer. Mr. Joyce could have continued doing it. He could have continued doing it until ushers had to help him up on the platform, and he limped to the platform, and they would have to turn the volume up because his voice was gone. And he could have continued to make the announcements, but he was thinking of the future. So he tapped Norman Lorimer. Can I call you Norman Lorimer? Is that okay? He tapped Mr. Lorimer. And Mr. Lorimer, for decades, did the job. And I can't think of any other compliment to pay him, but he did it with eminent efficiency. And Mr. Lorimer could still be doing it. But he thought of the future. And he picked the eminently capable Andrew Usher. And I think Andrew does a great job, apart from his threat to flog us and hang us up by our thumbs if we got into the dinner area early when we really shouldn't go in there. He's been very gracious. But they were thinking of the future. A leader has to think about the future. Notice this in three quick passages. Notice quickly in three passages in connection with Moses. Numbers 27. The Lord says to Moses, get up into this Mount Abiram, see the land. Be gathered unto thy people as Aaron was gathered. What's Moses say? Now this is incredible. Because this is not the kind of reaction I would have if God said to me, you're dying tomorrow. Moses said, let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation, which may go out before them, and which may go in before them, and which may lead them out, and which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord be not as sheep which have no shepherd. What's he thinking about? The future. And God said, take Joshua the son of Nun, a man in whom is thy spirit, and lay thy hand upon him. Now, in Numbers 27, Moses had to adjudicate the situation with the daughters of Zelophehad, their inheritance in the land. Amazingly, then, he is told in the same breath that he will have no inheritance in the land because he's not going to enter. His mind immediately turns toward the welfare of God's inheritance, God's people, and how they will be able to enjoy the inheritance God intended for them. He's outside of all of this now as a result of typology because he's linked with the law. He cannot take them into the land. And he thinks immediately that they will need somebody to do what he will no longer be able to do. I say, how remarkable is his lack of self-pity that he's thinking about the future of God's people. Deuteronomy chapter 3, he goes over this with the people of Israel. And he says that God told me to get up to the top of Pisgah and look westward and northward and southward and eastward and behold the land and die. And he says, charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him. He shall go over before thee. Moses recounted, among other things in that chapter, the unwillingness of the 2.5 tribes to go over Jordan. He longed to go over Jordan. He talks about the 2.5 tribes that did not want to go over Jordan. He presents a heart-touching plea to be allowed to do what they didn't want to do, and he is told no. And he turns around and charges Joshua and encourages Joshua and strengthens Joshua. And I say that it is a remarkable lack of petulance on the part of a man who was told no to something that he longed for. And finally, Deuteronomy chapter 31. Moses says to Joshua in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of good courage. He tells him, you're the one who's going to lead them into the land, not me. The Lord goes before you, he said. He will be with you. He will not fail you, neither forsake you. Fear not, nor be dismayed. He tells Israel, I cannot go, but God will go with you, and Joshua will lead you there. How remarkable is his lack of posturing. He's not presenting him as the greatest ruler they ever had, and nobody can replace him. He directs them to the next generation. Now, there's a word that has been coined for that. It is called generativity. From, of course, the idea of generations, generativity. It is said that when people get to a certain age, see, when people get to a certain age, they have a choice to make. They can then tenaciously hold on to every bit of real estate possible, every responsibility, every job, every task. They can just be worrying about their legacy, their reputation, their name. Or they can think about the future. And they can look for men that God is raising up and women that God is raising up, and they can think about the future and welfare beyond themselves. Generativity, thinking of the future so that God's people will be blessed. There are among us today, thank God, leaders of this stamp. There are among us today, thank God, men and women whom God is raising up. So to you, I would like to just say one more time, remember, a leader must know God. A leader must know God's people. He must care more for God's people than himself. He must care more for God's honor than his own honor. And a leader must think of the future.